Today's date is April 7, 2010. We're at the Amelia Island Museum of History. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Heritage Keepers Project. We are interviewing Wendell G. Brooks III, date of birth February 8, 1942, place of birth Jacksonville, Florida. My name is Robert Hamer, and I will interview Mr. Brooks on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Also attending the interview session are members of the Brooks family, Susan Sturgis, Bonnie Brooks Tharp, Brenda Brooks, and Laura Puka. Assisting me is Alex Buell, who will be running the operating equipment, and Sue Ann Tam and Bobby Foss assisting with the interview process. First, Wendell, let's start off by you telling us a little bit about your early time in Fernandina. You were born in Jacksonville, but lived actually in Fernandina at the time.
Yes, at the time there wasn't a hospital in Nassau County, and therefore I was born in Jacksonville, St. Vincent's, and came over the next day. I think the hospital came in the next year because there was a lot of my classmates born that next year, and they were shown to be born in Nassau County.
So do you have any remembrances of your early days here growing up, elementary school?
Elementary school. Was in the old high school on Atlantic Avenue. That's where I first started, first grade. And Mrs. Bryant was my teacher. Okay. She's been long dead, but she played the violin every morning for us. And
really?
It was a real fun time.
Yeah.
And I went through 1 through 6th grade there.
Okay.
And then when they built the new school, went from the 6th to the 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they built the one on Citrona, which was 9th through 12th. And my class was the ones that went from here to there and all the way through there and were the first ones to graduate from each one, barring every body that had pre-graduated at the old one. But we were the only ones that hold the distinction. Every time there was a new one, we graduated from it.
That's cool. That's great. Do you recall how large your class size was back in those days?
We had 61.
61. You graduating class in high school?
Yes.
61.
61.
Great. And what did you do after you graduated from high school? Did you go to work? Did you go to the military?
I wasn't in the military. I was a 4L. I had high school football injury, and I couldn't do anything. So I worked locally around here, and every job I had was on the waterfront area.
Mm-hmm.
In 1960, when I graduated, I started with the Sheriff's Water Patrol.
Oh, okay.
And it was like a part-time basis. When I was in school, I was in the School Boy Patrol, and I was a captain of that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was in the Civil Air Patrol, mm-hmm. and I was a captain of that. And then I became a lieutenant with the Sheriff's Water Patrol. And
one of strong leadership qualities.
I pride myself in that.
Take it for you. Good.
And I did that for a long time, and there wasn't any money in police work at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the private sector was where the money was at, and that's why I stayed, and I just did this part-time basis. Most of it was free.
Mm-hmm.
I started with the Sheriff's Department because the money had come up in 75. And I went through 78 when the new jail was instituted. But most of mine was, I worked warehousing, transportation. I was in building and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
I have a varied background of different types of jobs.
Sure, sure.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
I'm sure. Now, you mentioned the new jailhouse. Did you go to work at the new jailhouse?
I worked at the new jailhouse. I got it up and running. At the time, the sheriff was H.S. McKendry.
Okay.
I don't know the full story about the reason that we were terminated, other than there was an area that the visitors came in,
mm-hmm.
and there was no ashtrays around or anything like that, and they had messed up the jailhouse, and I was off over here, and when I got back over to the jail, the sheriff says, well, I don't need you anymore. We worked at the whim of the sheriff. All deputies still worked at the whim of the sheriff.
Gotcha.
And it's called just cause. And it's just cause they don't need you anymore. So there's no hard feelings. I mean, I went back into private sector again. I was at a guard at Amelia Island Plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came over to the city of Fernandina. And I worked with 12 years over there on a part-time basis.
Okay.
So I stayed in law enforcement or a paramilitary operation all my life.
Great.
And I've enjoyed it. I wouldn't go back to it again. But I enjoyed it immensely.
So going back to the jailhouse just a little bit, how long did you work at the jailhouse here?
Just
for the record, we were actually conducting the interview in the museum, which was the old county jailhouse.
Right, 1976 to 1978 when we moved. The first year I was just a jailer. Yeah. And when Johnny Bodine, who was the chief deputy at the time, mm-hmm. passed away, Bobby Moore, who was the chief jailer at the time, became the chief deputy.
Gotcha.
And they asked me to come in as chief jailer.
Right.
So I was chief jailer here for about 3 years.
Great. Now, being a brand new jail, was it sort of state of the art for that time?
The new jail was.
Mm-hmm.
The old jail ran on the... you had the prisoners in their cells, and then you had what they call trustees.
Okay.
And the chief jailer made a guy trustee, and if he did all right, he did his time in a trustee basis, which is you have free run of the jail, you deliver food, and you help wash the dishes and stuff like that. And if you messed up, you went back in lockup.
Right. So just for clarification for the record, a trustee is a prisoner who is sort of being rewarded for their good behavior and given some additional responsibilities, but takes them out of the lockup.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Can I clarify, the new jail is the present jail in Yulee?
That is correct.
And the old jail is right here in Fernandina,
233 South Third Street.
The right. museum.
The city had a lockup over there, but they did not house prisoners. When they would make an arrest, they would put them in lockup if they were drunk for about an hour or so. Then they bring them over here and give them to us, and then we would handle them from there out.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had no food facilities or any type of facility to house the prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
So we housed all the city prisoners and any state prisoners that came in also.
So you also had responsibility then for transporting the prisoners to the courthouse and back?
Yes, we did. I would get them ready the next morning after they'd been arrested for their bond hearing. We'd have a deputy come in. They'd take them down to the county, the courthouse. They would have their bond hearing, and they would come back. And anybody that went to trial, we would also transport them down there for the trial and bring them back.
Did you have any problems with prisoners escaping during transport?
We had, when I was here, we didn't have any escape during transport. We had one that escaped, and we caught him the next day from this jail. And then we had a massive breakout one night, and we got it stopped and sent them all off to jail again.
Well, could you give us some details about both those incidents?
Yes, we were working downstairs, and I think there was this guy that was brought in for loitering or something. And the dispatch room area was, and the booking room were right next to each other, and there was a bathroom that went around this side, and it was the only window in the jail that did not have a set of bars on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy went in there and went out the window, and he was gone in a flash.
Mm-hmm.
And we got him back the next day, caught him in South Jacksonville. He was a nonviolent type person, and he came back, he did his little stint here and went on with his life. The biggest jailbreak in Nassau County history, and this is kind of lengthy, but I'll give you every detail I can. The Highway Patrol stopped two cars in Yulee, and they contained six people, and it was a Blackman family. It was four Blackmans and two other guys. It had just escaped from Merritt Island.
Mm.
And they brought him in here, and we booked him, and we had nothing but trouble out of him the whole time. When you're in jail, you have 24 hours a day to figure out how to get out of jail or how to mess with the people's minds that are mm-hmm. in. So these guys, and with the help of a local guy, enticed the jailer that was on duty at the night to come up and look at a stopped-up toilet. And when he got up there, they grabbed him, took his keys away, and got out. They were planning on coming downstairs and killing me, my wife Laura, taking the jail dispatcher, stealing her car, and taking off again. Well, I had just got off duty, and I was downstairs, and this trustee came through, and he had a knife in his hand, and I can't remember his name, but I said, "What are you doing with your knife in your hand?" And he said, "I've come to help you. They out upstairs, and they're going to come kill you." So So I grabbed my .45 automatic, and there was a jailer at the door with a double-barrel shotgun pointing upstairs. I said, I need to get this guy outside. So I put him outside, and the window, the second window right here in this room, there was a broken window, mm-hmm. and it didn't have a lock on it, and that's where they were hidden. So myself and Fred English, who was a dispatcher's husband at the time, came upstairs. He went around to the white bullpen. We had a white bullpen and a black bullpen. And these guys were in the white bullpen. They had locked the jailer on the other side. They cut his throat on one side with a piece of glass, and they were trying to cut it with a butter knife on the other side, and it didn't work. So he just retired from the city. To just interject a little bit there. So we came upstairs, and as I came through that doorway, coming up to the white area that we would put these guys in, he was making a corner down there, and under DOC regulations, if there's an escape, you can shoot them. I fired one round, missed him. It went into his back. It was a .45 caliber bullet. Went into his back. He went down, thought he was shot. The other three came up the other side, and I stopped them over here. I got them on the ground. We brought them up, and we gave them eventually 22 years apiece. There were six of them. I never did hear what happened to the Blackman boys, but I know about one of the local guy that got 5 years. He ended up in Amarillo, Texas, and he made a pass at some lady out there, and he was beaten to death. But that was my claim to fame, I guess you might call it.
That's quite a story. Now, you touched upon something while you were relating that, about your family being in the jailhouse itself. Can you talk a little bit about that, Mike, from a family perspective?
From the family perspective, the children were 8 years old, and how old were you?
I forgot. Was, 10.
She was 10. Wendy was about 6 years old. My daughter was 10 years old. My son was 6 years old. And Susan was about 15 years old. They saw a lot.
Yeah, I imagine.
From the dregs of the earth up to people that you wouldn't ordinarily see in jail. And each person is different. You had to size the person up when they came through the door quickly and efficiently to know how to handle them.
Sure.
Some people would come in meek and mild and then turn on you. Some people would be violent when they hit the door, and all of a sudden everything, all the fight would be gone out of them because they know they're going to be put in jail.
Right.
And then you had the regulars that come in every week or come in every night. We had quite a bit of that. This little town, at that time, the criminal activity wasn't all that much. There wasn't that many drugs, although it was being filtered in at a later time.
Sure.
The biggest problem was burglary, more than anything else. And we had a family here that was the biggest burglars in town, and they were in the jail every week.
They were not good burglars.
They were not, yeah.
How many years did you actually have the family living in the jail with you?
4 years.
4 years, okay. Was it perceived to be the safest place in town to live here at the jail? Or?
I made it the safest place in town.
There you go. Yeah, good.
I made sure that my children were protected. My wife was protected. I made sure that the prisoners stayed behind their bars that need to stay behind the bars, and people that, trustees. And I knew that I could trust these guys before they came out of the jail cell doors.
Did your family have any difficulty with the prisoners? Did they annoy or threaten? Or I noticed you had young girls living here. Did they have any problems with the prisoners?
I never heard of any problem with the prisoners. We had one man in here that his name was Jacob Mangold. The first incident I had with the man was down in the Marina restaurant. He's a little short guy, about 5 foot, 5 foot one. And he was sitting in the Marina restaurant stacking empty beer cans. And, of course, Trisha Tundis, who owns it, she ran him out. And I came on back down here, and next thing I heard, the Methodist Church, there was a crazy man up there, naked, with the American flag draped across him. And he was keeping the Nazis out of the church. The city went down, who had jurisdiction. Denny Bell, who is no longer with us, was a sergeant on duty. And there was about six different officers that went in there. This guy ran into the church. The pews in the church are held down by lag bolts, 6 inches thick. This guy was ripping the pews up out of the floor by his hand. He just went crazy. Yeah. He was born in the shadow of the Castle Dracula. He had been married to what he called a cow, which was a very large woman. And she made him crazy. So he came to this country to try to leave her, and he just went crazy. Mm-hmm. When he got down here, we put him in solitary confinement over here. I kept him in there for a while, and I kept him in there for his own safety, mm-hmm. more than anything else. Because I was the only one that could talk to him, and my son was the only one that could talk to him. Mm-hmm. And my son was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And he had made a canister wagon for him out of toothpicks and a little piece of paper. And he made a scale model of a canister wagon. And later on, when they transferred him to Shands in Gainesville, he hung himself. But like I say, the stories that
you could go on
and I could go on and on and on.
That's good. Were there any other families living in the jail at the time other than yours?
No, we were the only family.
Okay,
here
so is that because your position allowed you to have the family in?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
I apologize.
I'm just wondering whether it would be a good time now to have Mrs. Puka and the girls talk about what their perspective was being in the jail.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be okay?
Wendell's daughter, correct. Okay. We have the good fortune to have Susan Sturgis, Wendell's daughter, with us, and just want to ask her a few questions. What was it like for you to live in the jailhouse or associated with the jailhouse, the space, growing up, and what were your experiences? Did you feel comfortable all the time?
I did feel comfortable, because most of the time we come, there was a door on the side of the house, mm-hmm. We would come through sometimes through the front and then go, but most of the time we were always coming through the side, so
sure.
We felt comfortable coming in that way. And then me and my sister, I mean, we lived in the house of the jail, but behind the jail was a little apartment, and so, well, we made it into a little apartment. And that's where we stayed most of the time. Mm-hmm. And you really weren't scared walking back there. You had the prisoners all hollering and screaming at you, but you would just go inside and lock the door until one day when one of the prisoners escaped, and there was like a little shed type thing on the side, and that's mm-hmm. where he went. And he just went through the window there. It was like right on the side. And we had the door locked, and somebody was yanking on the door trying to get in. And I'm trying to hold the door, and I'm trying to call Mama in the house. And we're thinking it's the prisoner inside. It was really Daddy, and then not the prisoner. He thought we were the prisoner
sure.
inside. We thought that was him outside. And so after that, we just never stayed there again because we didn't feel comfortable.
Gotcha,
we were
gotcha.
Scared, you know.
How old were you during this time?
I was probably 16.
Okay.
At
so
that time.
For the years that you lived there, you were 15, 16 years old. Did you ever...
Probably up to 17, I would say.
Did you have friends come in to visit with you, or did you always go to their house?
I always went to their house.
Okay. What about dating and things like
now
that?
Now, I did have dates, yeah, because I had some prom pictures where I dated one guy that was in the house, you mm-hmm. know, there. And we didn't pull those out of the album, but they're at home, you know. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them, you know. And then the pictures that we did pull out was when I was dating my husband, and he was a city police officer, and he's still a police officer
sure.
for the
okay.
last 33 years, but anyway, for the city. And so we have some pictures there of us sitting in the jail, and there's also some of when you walked in the front door of the jail. Let's see, you walked in the front door, and to the right there was like a bench, and then you went into dispatch and all that. So some of those pictures... Or one of them is me and my husband sitting on the bench, and you can see the green background. And one is where they're talking, and you can see the payphone mm-hmm. inside that little area as you walk in. So that's what some of those are. And then also there was one when my husband, boyfriend at the or date at the time, sent flowers to the jail. One of the little cards from Dottie B's said my name on it, which Brenda has over there.
Sure.
You know, says my name. What is it? My name and Wendell Brooks's daughter, but at the county jail.
Sure.
You know, so they deliver
yeah,
flowers here.
Sure,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
just to note, we'll scan those into our file mm-hmm. for you later on, so you can take those back with you okay. and you'll have them. But that'd be great to put in the file. Any other remembrances you have of your days here?
That was, yeah, that's pretty
good. Did anybody tease you at school about being the jailer's daughter or anything
I'm
like
sure
that?
I'm sure they did. I just don't remember a lot of it. You know? I'm sure, you know, and I mean, I never had anybody come to the jail other than boyfriends, you know, mm-hmm. not really any friends that I can remember.
Well, I would imagine it's a very prestigious job to be here at the jailhouse, too, to run the jail. So, I mean, as a, in a positive kind of a way, you represent the authority of the community. So that's pretty neat.
Were there other children who lived in the area of the jail that you and your sister and brother might play with?
Mm-mm, I don't remember that. Mm-mm. I don't remember any other kids, you know, okay. coming into the jail.
We also have the good fortune of having Laura Puka with us, who was Wendell's wife at the time while he was here at the jailhouse. Laura, what about your time here? What do you remember?
Well, I was a dispatcher, matron, and cook.
Ah, wow, okay.
And I guess I mainly remember the cooking part because you had so many to cook for.
How many did you cook for?
Probably 30-something.
Oh, wow.
At the most.
Wow. Now, were you cooking also for the deputies and everybody else as well?
No, only
just
the prisoners
for the prison?
And the family.
Gotcha.
What kind of food did you cook? Was it a set menu every day?
No, not really. We basically had the same thing each week, but maybe on different days. Mm. But it was like... like a tuna casserole or...
And pretty much you got to choose whatever you wanted to
yes.
cook.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And as a, what did you do as matron?
Well, I booked the female prisoners in, patted them down, fingerprinted them, and took them up back to their cell.
It sounds as though you had a very complicated job because you had to do more than one thing. Did
well,
you?
It was, but I sort of enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. And
of
you
course,
were
I
a county
enjoyed.
Employee?
Yes.
And did they pay you three separate jobs for everything?
No. One little measly paycheck.
Do you have any special remembrances at all? Any time that you felt threatened or?
No, I didn't feel threatened. We had a. There was a couple that were in here that really became, I wouldn't say friends, but they weren't the ordinary felon,
yeah.
you know. I think they were in like for dope or something.
Sure. Now, did you ever have the occasion, you and Wendell, to get out on it, you know, your own date night yourself or anything like that to get away from the jail?
Not really, I don't think.
So you're on 7 days a week, 24/7.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, the lady would help me cook, and then the trustees would deliver the food to mm-hmm. the prisoners.
Were there any women trustees, or were all the trustees men?
Men.
Hmm.
Well, the lady was, I guess. Yeah, we have one, the one that I was... talking about.
Great.
And were the women jailed for generally the same kind of offenses as the men were, or was it most
drug charges and DUIs and things like that?
Was there any prostitution?
Probably so, but I don't remember.
I was just wondering if that
I
was...
I mean, I don't think anyone was booked just for uh-huh. prostitution.
And how did you serve the meals to the prisoners? Did you have to go to the cells with them, or did they?
No, I put it on the plates, on trays, and the trustees would take the meals to the prisoners. I didn't have to do that.
And did your family eat the same food?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a big table in the center of the kitchen, and we usually ate there.
So did you also have to order the food for the jail?
Went to the grocery store, ordered it, brought it back. Mm-hmm.
And where did you usually shop for food?
What was the grocery store on Center Street?
Pantry Pride.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Eight Flags Antique Market is.
Right.
Great, Lauren. Anything else you can think of? Anything that pops in your head when you look back in those days?
Most of the time I felt safe. My husband did a very good job of...
Well, you helped make it safe as well.
That. But, it was quite an experience.
I'm sure.
It's not something I would go back and volunteer to do, but, I mean, because it could be dangerous.
Sure.
But I did enjoy it.
Good, good. Well, it's a real honor for us to have you here, and we thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And comments.
Thank you.
All right. We also have the good fortune to have Wendell's daughter, Bonnie Brooks Tharp, here with us today. Bonnie, can you reflect back a little bit on what life was like here when you were growing up?
Well, I mean, I felt safe as well, except for when the jailbreak did happen, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We did have... I had friends that would actually come here because I was young enough, and it was mainly in just the area of 3rd Street and right here in front of the museum,
mm-hmm.
you know. And they thought it was pretty cool to come, and, you know, you had prisoners hanging out of the windows.
Sure.
Or yeah, I don't remember any vulgarity or anything, because I do remember aggravating the jailers, though. I would always push the button to come in the front door instead of going in the side door. And, of course, they were going like, you need to quit. You know, I did aggravate them a lot with that, because they'd have to push the button, and, you know, the door would then open because it was automatic. So just the time whenever the prison break, or when they came out, you know.
Gotcha.
That was really scary.
Sure.
Yeah.
How old were you during this timeline?
I was probably 10. Yeah. About 10.
Okay. And was it difficult for you to have play dates and things like that with your friends? Did you go to their house or they come?
I more went to their house.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, we only had the little apartment, me and my sister.
Mm-hmm.
It was the two bedrooms and a bathroom. And that's where we slept at night, which was below the bullpen. And so we could hear the prisoners.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was pretty loud.
Yeah.
And so there was times where we'd go and stay the night at their house or at our grandmother's house on Bonnie View,
mm-hmm.
and get good night's sleeps. So, or we'd stay at the in the apartment, you know.
Now, did Dad have a police car at the time to get around?
He did. I don't think so.
Okay.
No, we just had our regular car.
Okay, good. So mm-hmm. there wasn't any you going to school in a police car?
No.
Or anything like that?
No, I would have said drop me off down the street.
Anything I didn't ask that maybe you want to add? Anything you can think of?
I mean, we learned a lot. I mean, like he was telling about this the one that made the wagon. Well, he also made me something.
Huh?
And it was a little, I don't know what it was. It was a box, probably, you know, so big, but it had little seeds in it, and it had a little windmill, and it had a little scene in it, and all that, and I could hang it on my wall.
Great.
And I think I still have it
That's
at the
cool.
house.
Yeah.
And do you remember that? Yeah. And the prisoners, I think we did have a woman trustee. I think her name was Kathy.
But
they would actually come into the kitchen, and we would kind of be supervised to a point.
Sure.
But they would talk to us and like fill us in, and they would say, "Now don't you do this, because
mm-hmm.
this is where you're going to end up." So they would tell us, you know, about, you know, being bad and
sure.
you know, being good, and what, you know, give us aspects on life, and I was only 10.
Sure, sure.
So, I mean, I guess living in the jail, it also makes you think that you know, no, I don't want to end up there. And, you know, I've never been in trouble with the law before, sure, or anything like that. And so it kind of helps you, you know, mm-hmm, to learn and do the outlook of, you know, I don't want to end up like that.
Sure, sure. Did you ever think about a career in law enforcement?
I have. Yeah. I watch a lot of cops on TV. My boys are actually in the military.
Oh, okay.
I have three sons that are in the Army.
Congratulations.
And serving, you know, I have, well, one just actually came back from Iraq, and I have another one in Afghanistan.
Oh, wow.
And I think that the one that just came back from Iraq, I'm pretty sure he's going to end up in being a police officer.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
He looks just like my father. He is the spitting image of my father.
That's great. Anything else you want to add?
No, everything was good here.
Thank you. It's an honor, Bonnie, to
thank
have
you
comment. We appreciate it very
thank
much.
You. Thank you.
Everybody ready?
Okay, Wendell, if you could, as well, we're still talking about the jailhouse and jailhouse experiences from a family perspective and from your personal perspective as far as responsibilities, can you give us a little bit of a feel for what it was like, the working relationship, say, between the county sheriff's department and the city police?
Back when I first came with the department, I had left Burgess and Cook, which was a trucking company, and there was a grand jury investigation at the time into the sheriff's department, and I was one of the grand jurors. And I knew, I had been working with the sheriff's department for years, and I was, there's supposed to be an exclusion rule about someone that works with a department, mm-hmm, investigating a department.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't happen, but it happened.
Mm-hmm.
The state attorney says, I want you on there because you know the inner workings of the department. And I said, I don't know the inner workings of the department. I work for the water patrol, and I just did water patrol. Doesn't matter, you're on the grand jury. I said, okay. So the sheriff and the chief deputy at the time were walking on eggshells with me, and I didn't go out with the water patrol, and they didn't come next to me because of the interaction. The grand jury found that there was nothing wrong, but some of the police officers at the time were trying to get the sheriff's department, and they instituted a lot of innuendos, you might say, and there became a block between the sheriff's department and the Fernandina Beach Police Department.
About what year would that have been?
This was 76, mm-hmm, when I, maybe it was 75, my memory's a little fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
But I immediately, within a month after the grand jury was over, I went to work at the sheriff's department. And everybody said that was payoff, mm-hmm, which it wasn't. I just wanted to be a deputy sheriff in Nassau County, mm-hmm, and I became a jailer. There was a lot of rhetoric going around about my employment, and some of my friends on the department didn't like it because I came over here, and some of my friends...
On the city police department.
Yeah, I had friends on both departments.
Mm-hmm.
I liked everybody. I didn't hate anybody at all. Never have. Except my barber. Sometimes. But there was a atmosphere that it could be tolerated, but there were underlying enemies, I guess you'd say, between the two departments. Because when they bring a prisoner over, they drop him and right as soon as the door closed, and they just left him, paperwork and all, and we had to process him because they didn't have a place to keep him over there.
Yeah.
There was, I think Joe Dokes was the police chief over there at the time, and him and McKendry didn't get along at all. They never did.
Mm-hmm.
There was right when, in response to any racial relations, we had what they call a white and a black bullpen. It was made up because at that time the relations between blacks and whites were still simmering in regards to, well, I have these rights. No, you don't. So we just went ahead and kept it. It wasn't made public. Everybody knew about it, but it wasn't thrown out into the public. And the white bullpen was the forward end. The black was the back area. And we kept about, I think it was six prisoners in each one of the bullpens. Mm-hmm. And we had the constant hollering back and forth, all kinds of negative remarks. And the blacks' bullpen was right above my bedroom. Mm-hmm. And these floors, I believe, are 1 foot thick, and they're poured, some of there's coquina in them. And when they would flush the toilets, they'd stop them up and overrun them. And I'd be laying in bed, and I've had toilet water dripping my face.
Mm.
And even though it was strained through the concrete, you could still tell it was toilet water. And I'd have to go up there and unplug the toilets, and then I'd lock them down to where they couldn't get in the toilets, and mm-hmm. I shut the water off so I could get a good night's sleep. And that's where Bonnie, when Bonnie was first over there, and Susan, they would get the same thing.
Yeah. Were there ever any African American sheriffs, deputies, or anything like that?
Yes, there was two.
Okay.
Now, Ben Sessions and Tim, our brother, were the two that I know about at the time. This is the ones I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
When they first started with Youngblood, they could make an arrest, but they could not transport them. They had to have a white police officer there at the time to bring them into the jail, because you would not put a white prisoner in a black police car driven by a black deputy sheriff. That's just the way it was in the old days.
Okay.
After, when I came to work, they were transporting, but mm-hmm. that's how it originally started out. I noticed downstairs you have a shirt that has the old picture of the sheriff and his deputies down there. I know every one of them, mm-hmm. and they're all dead now. But at the time, this is the way it was. Yeah. This was before 1964. After 1964, it changed.
Okay.
But you still had the segregated...
But we still had the segregated bullpens.
Were there bullpens also for women and men?
Just men. The women stayed downstairs in a regular... right below us right now, there was a section of jail cells just like there was up top here.
Mm-hmm.
When a matron would take the prisoner, female prisoner, to the back, either myself or a jailer went back with her to make sure there was no problem, because most of the women that came in here were bigger than our matrons, and we didn't want them overpowering them. Mm-hmm. There was attempted suicides a few times, and we caught them. Mostly with the clothing that they had on them.
Mm-hmm.
Tube tops, belts, anything they could get their hands on.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really have all that much trouble out of the women's section. Most of it was out of the bullpen in the front,
mm-hmm.
or if we had them in solitary. There was a guy from Yulee that we had, and I'm trying to remember his name. And we had him in there
in solitary?
In solitary with the door locked. And the outside door locked where nobody could get into him. Somehow he got matches and he got clothes. And these were like nylon clothes, and he would take it and set it on fire and just string it along the bars like this.
Huh.
And I had the keys. And I still haven't figured out how he got the matches and the clothes in there to do that sort of thing.
Can I go back to the women's?
Sure.
So the women had kind of a room.
It was a cell.
A cell.
Just like it was up here. They had the cells down here, and then there was a shower on the end. And it was away from everybody, so the prisoners couldn't look out that side and see the women showering.
Okay. And were a black and white women put together?
They were all put together.
So they were all in the cells?
White in one cell, black in the other. We kept it segregated.
Uh-huh.
We only had like two black women in Nassau County I remember we ever put in there, and one was a weekly visitor. She would cut her husband. She had a 12-inch butcher knife she kept between her breast. And when she came in, that was the first place the matron went to pull the butcher knife out. And then they would go down to what they call a cat crack, which was behind the palace saloon, and that's where the fight would be. And the city would bring them up, dump them on us. We'd separate them. End up, the county judge at the time, Judge Weatherford, would give them 2 weeks in jail, and then they'd go down the cat crack again. It was constant. every week they'd be in there.
Do you recall, I've never been able to find any information that there was ever an execution or capital punishment here in Nassau County. Do you recall anything like that ever happening?
There was rumors to the effect that right there at the top of the stairs against that window overfacing the street, there was an execution there. But it's just rumor. I never had.
How long ago would that have been?
1920. Oh. Hmm. 526. But that was a rumor. I don't know if it ever happened. I just heard the rumor all my life.
Now, you mentioned Sheriff Youngblood when you were speaking. And from all accounts, Sheriff Youngblood was a very colorful and influential character. Could you tell us a little bit about him?
They called him Spider. The blacks called him Spider. Down on 2nd Street. North was a red light district at the time. This was the early years. This is when I was like 10, 12 years old. And I remember because my granddaddy was a, quote, special deputy, I guess you'd call it. And we owned, at that time, we had closed the dairy at Five Points and opened the Bonnie View restaurant, which is one door down from the Palace Saloon. And he had that for years. Sheriff Youngblood would call us, make us phone calls and get all the people up when we had a so-called uprising of the natives. He was 6'5", and he had an arm stretch of about 6.5, 7 feet. And he would walk down that street down there with his arms outstretched, and they called him the Big Black Spider because he had such a long reach. He could reach out and grab you. And he was a very powerful man at the time. Not only physically, he ran the county. The city police had, you know, very little power.
Did you work for him at all?
Just in the Sheriff Water Patrol.
Could you tell us, you keep mentioning the Water Patrol, what is it that the Water Patrol did? What were you patrolling?
We would go out and rescue people.
Oh,
that
okay.
were overdue or whatever, missing. They call us that. We'd also patrol the rivers up there just to get the feel of the rivers. Now, the rivers up there have changed so much, I probably couldn't find my way around. But years ago, myself and Fred Jones were the main two guys in the Water Patrol because we knew the rivers up there really well. We knew where all the fish were, knew where the bad guys had their gill nets out, and we'd go up there and take care of all that type of thing.
Did the prisoners ever get the opportunity to go outside and exercise or walk around?
They were given, not the ones that were locked up. Mm-hmm. The ones that were trustees had the option to go outside in this area where the parking lot is now.
Gotcha.
My garage set right there that we put the car in, our personal car, we'd take them out, walk them back through here, and we'd sit there and watch them for about an hour. They could go out and sweep the sidewalk off. There was one time they were sweeping the sidewalk off and they put the electronic door lock in. There was a guy there putting an electronic door lock. And I came through from the kitchen side and I wasn't told that the guy was putting it in. And I got to the door and I said, "What you doing?" And he says, "I'm putting an electronic lock in here to keep y'all in the jailhouse." I was in plain clothes. I said, "Oh, okay." So I went back over and put my uniform and gun belt on, and I walked back out and I said, "Can I get out now?" He said, "I'm so sorry." I said, "I just did that to mess with you here."
Sure.
But I said, "I'm like that."
What kind of weaponry did you have here? Did you have an increased arsenal in case you had a problem at all, shooting rifles and things?
The only arsenal we had was 4 shotguns and 4 machine guns. Mm-hmm. And that's the only arsenal I ever saw.
But pretty much you all just had like a...
We had sidearms. Sidearms, and we bought our own.
Hmm. Oh, really?
I carried a .45 automatic for years.
And that was your weapon of choice?
Yeah. And then when I went to the city, I bought a 9mm 15 round. But anyhow, everybody had they had Lugers, 9mm Lugers, 45s, 357s, 38s. Hmm. 38 was a standard sidearm for years around here.
Yeah.
Until the crooks ended up with more firepower than the police did.
Do you know if that's still the current policy at the Sheriff's Department? They can still bring in their own weapon?
Yeah, and bring in your own weapon.
That's an interesting point. One other question about the building itself. Was it ever perceived to be a hurricane shelter or disaster relief?
They told us that this was the sturdiest place in the world, and I believe it. Mm-hmm. The walls are 2 or 3 foot thick, some in some places. This one's 2 feet thick up here. I think there's some 3 foot thick sections down below. I believe it could withstand to the biggest hurricane, mm-hmm. probably a class 5. The windows might be blown out, mm-hmm. but the building would still be here.
Were there ever any hurricanes that were coming
Mount through? Mount Dora was, I think Mount Dora came in 1960. That was the closest one ever came, and it came about 60 miles off the coast. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really have, we had some 80 mile an hour winds, but mm-hmm. that was about it.
Did anybody, any of the citizens come here for relief at all?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Maybe they used the post office or something else.
Maybe some of the people came off the beach and went to the post office, but mm-hmm. I don't know that for a fact. I stayed in my house, which was on Bonneville Road, mm-hmm. and we had like maybe some 60 mile an hour winds.
Sure.
That was the most of it.
How many jailers did you have here, and how many were on duty at any given time?
We had one jailer on duty and one matron. And the jailer or the matron, whoever was closer to the radio, answered the radio on answer the phone. And we had a weather watch phone that we had to answer every morning at 10:15. So somebody had to be there at 10:15 because they called counties out. And when you didn't answer your county, then they would keep calling you and calling you until they got a hold of you. And if they didn't get a hold of you on this weather phone, they called you on your regular phone. We had what they call intercity radio. We could call as far as Green Coast Springs on the intercity radio by changing frequencies. But that was the farthest we could get. We had what they call a low band. When they first came out, it was a low band transmission, and nobody could intercept it over the scanners they have nowadays. But when they went to the high band, it can be intercepted by anybody. So you got the anybody can hear it.
Now, when your wife said that she was the dispatcher here, hmm. Did you really have the range to be able to call all over the county from here?
We had repeater systems in that were set up. And when a call came in, according to where it was at, we would call the deputy on duty in that area at the time. We had Yulee, Callahan, Hilliard. Hilliard, I think, was patrolled by there was a city police officer at the time, so there was only one officer on duty at one time, and it wasn't a 24-hour thing. There was just one cop over there. So we would send our people in to help him. We had two deputies in Yulee because that was where the so-called drug trade comes in and where the burglaries happen. And then we had two on the island at that time.
Thinking back too, wasn't there a radio tower?
There was a radio tower out here for years, and I didn't. That's where the original repeater system was. Mm-hmm. I see it's not there now. Mm-hmm. They had one in Yulee, one in Callahan, and one in Hilliard. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way a repeater system for us to reach all the way up there. And sometimes they get out in Briceville, and you couldn't reach them because they were so far out of range up to what they call a Nassau Strip. There was a little strip up there that runs down into Duval Canyon and runs back out. And if there was an accident in that Duval Strip, we had to go into Jacksonville to come up and work that mile strip in there mm-hmm. because it was Nassau County, unless we get a state trooper to go up and do it for us. Mm-hmm.
Well, did you have any role in maintaining that tower, the Sheriff's Department?
I did not. There was, I think it was Motorola came in and took care of it.
Okay.
But I don't know. I think it was ordered through the office at the courthouse.
Gotcha, okay.
And I think Annis Moore did that.
Okay, so
and I like to interject, Annis and Bobby Moore were two of the greatest people, and I kind of emulated myself to be like Bobby. Bobby was a black belt karate, and he was very mild until you got him mad. And I took a few lessons from him. You have to learn how to handle a person when they're drunk or they're fighting and stuff like that yeah. without getting hurt yourself. Mm-hmm. So Bobby taught me quite a few of the holes mm-hmm. and in case the guy got you, how to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I did pretty good up until one night I walked in over here and I saw two deputies in there. One had blood streaming from his face and the other one had the gas guy in a reverse wrist lock and up behind a hammer lock. So I went over and I'm helping. I grabbed that wrist lock and went to go up, And I realized I'm on the wrong side, so I started coming back down the other way, and this guy kicked me in a very private area. And I don't remember anything after that. They say I beat him mercifully, and I don't remember it. I apologized to him the next day, but I don't remember it. Sometimes you get like that. I mean, you get to where you're injured, and you don't know what's going on, but you do the right thing at the time. And I guess I did.
Now, you referenced Bobby. What was his title, just for the record?
Bobby was the chief jailer.
Chief jailer, okay.
And Annice was his wife, and I don't know if there was the chief matron, I guess you could say.
Yeah, just one for the record. Yeah. One instead. Before we go any further, is there anything else about the jail that you want to reference? I see you have some notes there.
Two little things. Being that I was police officer, and when my daughter Bonnie would go out and stay out late, all I had to do is call police, and they would go out to Main Beach, get on the PA system, and say, "Bonnie, your daddy wants you to go home or call you right now." Then that used to embarrass her, but after a while, it didn't even bother her. My son Wendy, which you haven't met, and you probably won't, but he was about 6 years old, and I gave him a BB gun. And he had gone over this church over here, his old car sitting on the ground, and he said, "Well, I'm going to test my BB gun out." And he knocked out all the windows with the BB gun. And the preacher came over, and I mean, it was a piece of junk, but, you know, preacher came over and told me about it. And I saw Wendy come walking up. And I said, "Wendy, did you shoot the windows out of that car?" "Yes, sir." "Just give me a gun." And I got the gun, and I wrapped it around the pole out here in front of the jail. He'll never forget that. He was very impressionable. He did right by everything he did. I mean, none of my children ever got into trouble. Mm-hmm. There was an unfortunate thing one day. He was on the south end of the beach one day fishing, and I put my .45 up on the dash of his pickup truck. And at that time, they had just put that area into state hands, and it was a state park. You're not supposed to carry weapons in a state park. Well, this gentleman, who was an officer down at the time, came over, saw the gun there, arrested him, took him out to county jail. Laurie Ellis was a sheriff at the time, and me and Laurie always got along.
When was this? What year?
Laurie Ellis, this was when he was sheriff.
How old was your son?
20.
Okay, so it was like the 90s.
Yeah, in the 90s, I believe it was. And I heard about it over the radio, and they told me, "Don't go down there. Don't mess with the state when they're doing something." Well, I don't listen real good when it happens to my family. So I go down, and by that time, they had him in the county jail already. So I just called Laurie, and the RO already released on his own recognizance to me. And he got a little work time over at Talbot Island. But other than that, my children, it turned out really well.
That's great. That's a great backstory.
Were there any particular neighborhoods or part of the county that had reputations for being trouble spots that when you got the call, you kind of gulped before you went in there?
Yeah, there was a section over the, for years, from 8th Street over to 14th Street, and from Beach Street down to Hickory. That's where all the black people live. And then the white people, the affluent whites, lived on this side with the big houses where the bed and breakfasts are now. And then the subdivisions from 14th Street over for the lower income, which worked at the mills. And that's where it was for years, and then integration came along and it kind of broke up. But you still had bad sections. You still got bad sections over in the black section for drug trade. And this one guy, I see his name in the paper constantly from when I used to arrest him. He's still being arrested. The only other time is the bar fights up in Callahan here. I don't know if the bars are still up there, but that was one of the biggest. I mean, we'd send two deputies in if we could. If not, one deputy would go in. And that's all we had over there at the time. Now, a couple of them got their tails whipped, but we ended up getting them in jail.